Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Bodies in the Box podcast here on WFI episode 23, would you believe? Yep, we're still here. We're still going. Most of us are still alive, so to speak, though I was struggling with that this morning. So joined tonight by Dave Cowden, Jan Gorski Monsieur, and our expert on all things La Liga, our Gav. So, gentlemen, how are we doing?
Not so bad, Andy. Not so bad.
Nursing the same hangover, Andy. Nursing the same hangover. But just mine's a little more fresh than yours, let's say.
Yeah, I've had the Sunday dinner now, so I'm feeling a little bit more alive. What about yourself there, Gav? Are you drinking yours off?
Of course I am.
Good man. Now, last night, apart from partaking in a few beverages, I can understand a lot of people, about 80,000 of them at Wembley, who suddenly decided they needed to go drinking, because I was watching what was, good grief, it was dreadful. It was a glorified training session that was televised, and it was utter crap. It really, really was. And to be honest, it kind of got me thinking, what's the point of international football? So can anyone put me right on this, because I'm starting to get to the point of what is the point outside of actually being in a tournament? There just seems so little point. I mean, we're 7-8 weeks into the season and this is our second international break, and some of the teams that are playing, it's just like, what, you know, really international football? You know, teams of waiters against postmen, where's it going? Is there really any point to it anymore?
I think there is, personally. It's maybe an age thing, and I'm sure Jan might agree with me on it as well. International football used to be, and I do stress, used to be the pinnacle, Andy. Certainly when I was a kid, I loved international football, and I've retained that to this day. I do see a value in it, but on the other hand of that, I do see where you're coming from in regards to these smaller teams and whatnot. But ultimately, I think, certainly within Europe, with the breakup of Europe, of the old Europe that we used to know, the Eastern Bloc side of things, and the breakup of Russia, we even have, if you take the old Yugoslavia gone, you know, Germany's reunited. The landscape has changed massively in Europe, which has sort of in turn created all these little sort of hamlet nations, if you will. You know, like certainly my own Northern Ireland, we're playing San Marino. There's a kind of irony in that. Last night, very, very small country of Northern Ireland playing an even smaller country of San Marino. Northern Ireland could be said have more of a footballing tradition. You know, we've been to a couple of World Cups and so on. We've been to a few. But that was back in the day, a long time ago. It's 30 years since we've been to a World Cup. And that is mainly down to all these smaller nations and the breakups. And you know, certainly the breakup of Russia produced two or three very strong nations. I think you've seen in Europe, or certainly for World Cup qualifiers in Europe, you've seen the effect on that, and you see sometimes big nations missing out because of the way the draw takes place and because of that. Now, does that devalue the game? Should there be a secondary tier of qualifying? I know that there's a train of thought out there at the moment that wants to expand the World Cup. It's one that, personally, I don't buy into, surely because I think we play enough games of football and players play enough games of football with all these side tournaments, Copa America, the African Cup of Nations, which bizarrely takes place in the middle of our season. And, you know, the Euros, World Cups, all these different tournaments. Every summer it seems to be there's a tournament. Olympics even, you know, you find players being dragged into. So in that regard, to expand a World Cup and take it from, you know, a month, and if you're going to expand it, you're going to move that up to maybe 6 to 8 weeks. So that's a whole summer gone. It's a conundrum, Andy, of what to do with it. And, you know, I think we can discuss a wee bit about it. But for me, I think the format that it's in at the moment is absolutely fine for a World Cup. But questions could be asked about the qualifying groups. I think, you know, we do see an awful lot of David against Goliath. It's wonderful whenever David wins, but it's a rare occasion.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, we'll come to the World Cup expansion plans a little bit later on, but I think what we get too often is it's not so much David against Goliath, it's David against David, you know, endlessly, it seems, as well. I don't know. I mean, what about you, Gav? I feel like half of international football these days just seems to be pointless. I mean, you know, you've got teams going through the motions against complete amateurs, and I don't really see the great value in it for some of these nations. What, you know, just turning up and trying not to get thumped 15-0. I mean, is there any value in that, really?
Follow on from what Dave was saying, I used to go to Lansdowne to watch all the Republic of Ireland games, and Like Dave, I love the international scene. But when you think back to, say, 1988, the 89, the qualifying for the World Cup, we were playing teams like Turkey and we were putting five past them. Hungary, beating them easily. You know, it has changed that these teams, you know, they're much better today than they were 20 years ago. So maybe it's just a case with these smaller teams, they just need time. Now, I know there's small and then there's Andorra and Liechtenstein, you know, tiny, tiny nations. But, like, what do you do?
Wayne Rooney loves them, Gav.
Of course he does. He's built his career on it. international period for me, I do enjoy it because I do love watching the South American fixtures because I think they're incredibly competitive. Whereas with the European side of things, you kind of know who's going to win. There's not really that competitiveness. The Spain-Italy game was a good game to watch. But other than that, like watching Ireland play, absolute muck. Flicking through watching England last night, I mean, Jesus Christ. And then Northern Ireland and San Marino, they're almost pointless, but they have to be done.
And Jan, what about you then? Because, I mean, obviously you're the most experienced of us here. What's your take on international football?
I largely agree with what Gav was just saying. Thing is, being a fair bit older than Gav, I can also recall that when Hungary were a world superpower in football, 1954, they got to the semi-final. They were expected to win it, but the West Germans, as they were then, who were not expected to do anything because they were not a big side, they actually got past them and they went on and won it. So I'm not these days. I love the big international competitions. I'll get that out. I like watching the Euros. I like watching the World Cup. It's not that I don't think the problem is that there's small teams. I agree with Gav. You've got to give them a go. You can't not let them in because they're small. No, they're fans, they're teams. They have as much right to compete as anybody else. If they get knocked out early, fine. But then again, look what happened with Iceland in the Euros this summer. Nobody expected them to do anything. England were once a big team. Now they're getting knocked out by Iceland. Iceland are on the way up. They won 3-2 the other night after being 2-0 down. I can't remember who they were playing, but they were playing a team nominally bigger than them. The Czech Republic, a team at the moment which are languishing. But go back, 30 years, they were winning the Euros. They were fantastic. You know, they were Czechoslovakia then. But they were fantastic. And they're starting to build again. They're looking a bit more useful. The Germans gave them a good pasting the other night. There was a lot of good play in between. The problem is not the small teams. The problem is that there is too much international football now. One of the reasons that people like Dave and me used to like it years ago was because it was quite a rare event. And of course, it wasn't television covered wall to wall the way it is now. I mean, frankly, now, if there's international games on, you know, in the bottom end of the Southern Antarctic, you can watch them on the telly because every game is out there for you to watch if you want to. Or you can watch it on the computer, or you can stream it, or do whatever the hell you like. But you can see, you can get inundated with it. That's the problem. It's not whether Liechtenstein's playing or Malta's playing and making England struggle, which is always good for a laugh. It's the fact that there is so much international football. And when these breaks come around, if they're for qualifiers, well, you know, I'm not that bothered. Okay, fair enough, qualifiers, whatever. It's when the endless friendly breaks come around. You think, what is the point? You know, you can do this kind of thing behind closed doors. Or you could, if you're going to have a friendly, at least have it against somebody that's going to excite people. Normally, I'm really with Gav on this. I think everybody deserves a fair shake. And if they go through, great. If they don't, at least they had a go. They can say, well, you know, we were in it too. It's what you might call the Olympic spirit. You know, if somebody enters 100 metres and they're from Uzbekistan, nobody really expects them to win. But he can say years later, I went to the fucking Olympics and I ran against so-and-so. And that's fair enough. That's what the sport's supposed to be about.
I'm not saying that we tell teams that they can't play. You know, there's nations that they can't have teams. But there's just so many games and many minnows. It's just a case of, does international football need to be looked at? The structure of it is, can it be done slightly differently? So maybe all of the lesser nations can maybe just play each other. I don't know, maybe you stick them in a group.
But the only problem with that, Andy, is that means the smaller nations never get a chance to pit themselves against the bigger teams. So how are they supposed to improve?
they play each other and they qualify to go on and then be in the qualifiers.
Yeah, but that means only one or two ever get to play the bigger teams. They're being counted out before they're counted in. Everybody deserves a crack at the big one. If they get humiliated, fair enough. But sometimes, as we saw with Iceland, they don't. And that makes it worth it. To me, Iceland were the story of the Euros. I have to think that Portugal won, because otherwise I wouldn't remember. The real story was Iceland.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between Iceland and a small village just outside of Turin, though, you know what I mean? When it comes to international football, because it just, you know, some of the nations, it's just, I just feel like it's getting a little bit too much.
Yeah, but the teams the size of San Marino, let's name them. San Marino, Liechtenstein, Andorra, now we're struggling.
Faroe Islands,
who beat Latvia 2-0 in Latvia the other night. See what I mean?
You see, Azerbaijan Latvia beat, Norway as well yesterday.
Exactly. And that's how these teams get to be better, because they play teams who are better than them and they beat them. And that gives them confidence to go on and try it against somebody else they might be drawn against who's phenomenally better than them, but they still might get a result.
But there's another aspect as well in this. You know, the problem lies in Europe, because Gavin rightly said it. Number one, the competitiveness of what Gavin was suggesting is completely true. The CONMEBOL South American Federation and their qualifying for the World Cup is competitive, nearly all on a level. Don't get me wrong, there's a disparity a little bit, but more or less, there's no Faroe Islands. There's nobody who's complete crap, basically.
No, but the thing is, Dave, it's not about competitive, it's about entitlement. And every nation is entitled to take part. If they go out in the early rounds, fine.
Yeah, but I'm looking along the lines of how we manage it.
How you manage it is you do it regionally.
Well, that could be an idea. But I was going to say, you know, moving it forward, you have your teams there, the top four of the group in South America go through. The fifth place playoff is against Oceanic's top team, which is 99% of the time New Zealand. The South American side generally prevails. But then you take the other aspect of it. There is no qualifying in South America for the Euros equivalent of the Copa America, because there's not enough countries and not enough teams. They have to invite teams to actually make a tournament.
Exactly.
So there's that aspect where there's less competitive international football down here. Europe, we have to qualify for Euros. We have to qualify for the World Cup. As you say, domestic seasons are being interrupted. We're, what you rightly said, 8 games into a season, we've been interrupted twice. The flow of the season has been interrupted. These teams are just about finding their feet, bump for the fucked off an international break again. They all have to come back after, you know, and you know, it's my bugbear about the distances traveled down here in South America, and these players coming from Europe in a 10 to 12 hour flight and then flying all over the place, backward and forward, and then another flight home the following week. And they're long distances. It has an impact on domestic seasons. And I would love to see that there was another way of doing it. I would love to see.
So what we're saying then is that the real nub of the problem isn't the Andorras and the Liechtensteins. It's the way this thing is organised.
Absolutely, but there's no... Jan, I don't see a plan B. I don't see how it cannot be that unless we make... Our players play all summer.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? This is what they have to work at. How do we do this? How do we? Maybe we can still have as many teams, but they don't get to play each other twice, or they don't get to play each other endlessly in fifth place playoffs and things like this. Basically, one of the ways around the European end of the thing, of course, is you have the playoffs. You have the first team qualifies. Maybe it depending on the size of the group, make all the groups the same size for a kickoff. And the second team sometimes also qualifies, and the third team goes for playoffs. Well, screw up the playoffs. First and second can qualify. Third place is nowhere. That's out. They could do that. They could also do preliminary rounds the way they do in the FA Cup and things like this. But part of the problem is, for us, is that, like I say, it's wall-to-wall TV. So it seems, I mean, a lot of these games have always happened, but they were just not of interest to us and not reported on. But now it's there the whole time.
Do you feel Jan, it's the international federations are saying, hey, football's exploded. It's a multi-billion industry now. We want our fucking share of that. And I think that comes into
I think there's an element of that. But the other thing is, of course, Dave, when we were kids, there were hardly any foreign players of European, never mind South American origin, playing in the Premier League. So we didn't notice players going away to play for... Uruguay or for playing for Argentina or Ecuador or El Salvador or whatever. We just didn't have that. So it seemed that it wasn't happening, but of course it was happening. And they were going away from teams like Real Madrid instead, or Porto, but it wasn't affecting the UK and the Premier League and the Scottish leagues and whatever. Whereas now, can you imagine if the UEFA, I mean, one of the suggestions I've heard over the years is that UEFA effectively be split into two, UEFA A and UEFA B. And UEFA B would be basically the Scandinavian teams and some of the smaller stuff. Well, could you imagine Scottish football being decimated for a UEFA B tournament as all these Finns, Swedes, Norwegians, Icelanders, whatever, had to bugger off to play, I don't know when they'd play it, in the summer probably. But that would come in, you know, that would clash again with other tournaments elsewhere. There are just too many tournaments. I mean, maybe they should scrap things, have the World Cup, but scrap the Copa America, scrap the Euros. Maybe that's the way to go about it. It's a hard line to take, but if you have to do it down, that might be the way to do it.
Obviously, we have our seeding, our European seeding, our world seeding system. Do you think there's any merit in, you know, picking the top 24 or 32 teams from each area? And that's what they're playing for, to be in that in a sort of coefficient manner?
I think you'd have to have preliminary qualifying rounds from which the 24 winners of those rounds could go forward. I don't think you can simply discriminate, you're big, you're going through because you'll pull money in, you're not big, you can sod off. I don't think you can do that because that's not the spirit of the way it's supposed to be. I think everybody has to have a chance.
What about almost like a knockout format to get you into the group stage? You know, like we were saying about the preliminaries.
If you have seeded
against non-seeded, the teams that win go through, go into the group stages. And the thing is, that them games will have some meaning to them because there's something at the end of it. And it might actually get people a little bit more interested. Yeah, it might just get people a little bit more interested in watching these games, because let's not beat around the bush. I mean, it's clearly against money, about money, because, you know, international football all used to be Wednesday. You know, they'd be playing the internationals on a Wednesday night. Now it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. It's staggered over 5, 6, 7 days. They're all staggered out because they want to get as many viewing figures, you know, the highest viewing figures as absolutely possible for each game. It's about money. It's simple as that. It's purely and simply about money.
It's like
the
these
money.
Friday night games in domestic leagues. It's all about money. It's all about just...
They're saturating it. They're actually... Yeah. Football has been... It's on every single day.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree.
It's about quantity over quality, though. That's maybe what it is that I feel about international football at the moment.
It's just quantity, full stop. Whether it's quality or not, it's just quantity, for the reasons that they want viewing figures, because it's going to be put on telly. And like I said, as Gav was just saying, it's saturation coverage wall to wall. It wouldn't matter if it was quality or not. It's still saturation coverage. And you can just think, well, why? Because it's the money. Now, I don't think that we can make the teams suffer for that. What happens is the federations have to look at themselves and say, well, how are we doing this really? Are we really doing this in the interest of the game or of the fans? Certainly not of the players. Are we doing it for the interest of our bank balance? And I think that your idea, maybe of a knockout preliminary, which then gets you through to the groups, if that could be sorted equitably, I think that's a good way to go. I like the sound of that.
For me, then, the potential is to have less groups and less teams. So you're not playing as many matches, but maybe the top two go through, there's that competitiveness. Yeah, everyone's had an opportunity.
Exactly.
But you've got a little bit more competitiveness there. And perhaps that will just give it a little bit more interest that there's something on the line.
As you say, if a team seeded 1, 2, or 3 plays a team who's unseeded, then it means that the smaller teams get a chance to play the big boys.
Yeah.
That's worth it. I think that's crucial. The idea of saying the small teams are so poor they can only play against other small teams, that's when the whole thing gets messy. And nobody really wants to see, you know, except the locals, say, you know, Andorra against San Marino. Well, nobody's paid to see that, except
a
handful
of people. Another problem is, from our time, Jan, you know, the old European Cup, as it used to be, didn't eat into your season just the same way as the Champions League does. And again, it's all to do with marketing and so on. You know, the European countries...
Well, do you know how the old Europa, the Euros used to work? Yeah, no, not the... the UEFA Championships, not the club teams, the international teams. Do you know how that used to work? That basically, the teams would play throughout the season. There wouldn't be so much international breaks. There'd be a few days. Most of the time, you didn't know these teams were playing. England might play Italy. We'd know about that because we'd be watching it. But Hungary might play Bulgaria. We wouldn't know about that. It wouldn't even be reported. And then towards the summer, round about European Cup time, that sort of end of thing, there would be two semi-finals played from the teams who got that far, and then a final. And that's it. There was no actual tournament. It's fascinating to read. Read it through the 60s and the 70s. And look it up, and you'll see it was done very surreptitiously. And the trick was there was no mass TV coverage.
No, but there's huge sponsorships involved in all these tournaments.
Oh yeah, that's the problem.
Just going back to one that you mentioned earlier, Dave. Then the Africa Cup of Nations, you know, playing this halfway through a European season when you know the biggest stars of the tournament come from European teams. I mean, I know you've got to respect that continent. And where they want to have their tournament, but surely it would be in their interests to kind of stage it around and be more understanding towards the European clubs.
But who wants to play football in an African summer?
Yeah, but Southern Hemisphere, you're playing it right down in South Africa in the summer. It's their winter, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that's true. Good point. Good point.
Well, it depends where in Africa you are, whether it's winter or not. You know, if you're up around the equator, there is no bloody winter.
No, exactly.
Well, that's it. And then again. You know, that's just not conducive to playing football at any point of the year, though, is it, really?
No. I mean, the thing is, what we're subliminally suggesting by default here is that the African Cup of Nations basically gets played somewhere else to fit in. I mean, but if they play north of the equator, you know, Libya, Egypt, whatever, summer there is the same as our summer. It's not helped by the fact the equator runs right through Africa.
Brazil played here in Natal. On Thursday even, it was 29 degrees here. Now, it's 30 degrees is the cutoff point for water breaks, but you're 1 degree below that. Like, that's not an awful lot of difference. Those guys on that pitch, the gravy was running out of them. And the impact that has, from my point of view as a Liverpool supporter, I saw Phil Coutinho play the full 90 minutes in that. And bust his gut, in the full 90 minutes. He's heading up to Venezuela for Tuesday. Same temperatures, but roughly around the same line on the equator to the north of the equator. And it's nuts. Then they have to come back and so on. South America at times, people forget the actual bloody size of the place and the climate change.
Oh, yeah.
People look at it and go, Europe's bigger than that. No bloody way it is. South America is massive. And you need to actually be in it to actually get the fucking scale of it once you start flying around to different countries and whatnot. It's like, it makes Europe look tiny. So, again, you've got all of those ranges. You know, down in Paraguay, whenever Brazil played there, I think it was like 12 or 10 degrees that night. Roll that forward a month. They're playing in 29 degrees in Natal. There's an impact on players returning to Europe, returning to their teams. And with the money taking over, ultimately, these players are now... Back in the day, it was a pleasure and a privilege to play for your country. Now it's become almost like this headache with clubs, having to release their players, their investment, their gems, their diamonds. That has changed, I think, the perception of international football to the fan, because we listen to our clubs harp on about how unjust and how unfair it is. I'll use Coutinho as the example. Labouring in that kind of heat, return for the biggest match of the season, the following Monday. And I think there's a selfishness that's come in from the clubs that maybe wasn't there.
I think there's some truth in that. It's also made the players, I mean, as we mentioned Liverpool, Joel Matip has said he's not going to the African Nations Cup so he can concentrate on his season at Liverpool. It's making the players make choices. The problem with it being a global game is it's subject to global weather as well and global timescales. And there is basically too much of it because it's staggered for this TV revenue that we know. As Gav was saying earlier, it's on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And it's crazy. It's instead of just getting it all out of the way in one go, say, you can pick, because of the staggered time difference, you can pick two or three games to watch, but that's it. You can't watch all 47. They make it so you can, and that way it just drags it out.
I think with the way the format of league football has gotten, with the Champions League and the Europa League, the majority of the games are of a high quality. And when it reverts to international break, we almost, I don't think we care enough whether our country, our own country, is doing well. We're more concerned that our top players from other countries, we're more concerned with their well-being than if our country actually gets a good result. Like, for argument's sake, I was watching the Poland and Denmark game yesterday. And for me, this season, Milik for Napoli has been arguably the transfer of the season in Europe. And then his ACL goes, and you're kind of looking at it going, Jesus Christ, that's Napoli season fucked, basically, in my opinion. They can't replace a player like that. And I think what happens is the fans just get so frustrated with international breaks that they've almost lost that, what would you call it, you know, the romance. We used to be very romantic regarding when Ireland were playing back in the late 80s, early 90s. It was great. Now, today, I cannot wait till next week until the league is back. I've no interest really in the qualifiers because I kind of know who's going to win. You do. And it's boring. It really is boring. So, yeah, maybe what Andy was saying there, you know, a two-tier system might change it. Or maybe not. Like, it's a great idea, but it's never going to happen. If anything, they're just going to increase it more and more and more and more. So, you know, it's just one of those. It's evolving. It's evolving with money wrapped around it.
Yeah. So, do you think, Gav? Do you think like club football has hurt international football? Or do you think it's just there's a natural evolution that people are more emotionally invested in their own clubs because that's what they're passionate about. You know, that's the club that they chose rather than the country is just where they happen to be born, if you know what I mean.
Andy, you're spot on. As I said, I cannot wait till next Saturday because my routine is fucked up. You know what I mean? I was supposed to be watching La Liga on Friday, Saturday and Sunday and now I have to put up with watching Wales versus Georgia. I don't want to watch that. Also, I'll press the red button and I'll watch Finland. You know, there's just, I have to wait till tomorrow to watch Argentina and Brazil, them boys get on. Because again, for me, I think it's heads and tails heads and shoulders above the European format.
But do you know why that is, Gav? Because it still matters down here. It's like the World Club, Club Championship. It still matters. This is to get to the World Cup. The money isn't the same down here. The clubs aren't laced with the same kind of money. The media aren't all over them the same way. Our season doesn't stop for an international break. There's so few of the actual players playing in the South American arena. They're all in Europe or other leagues. So therefore, it has zero impact on people's club football. And you get this thing of and all these countries down here, you know, they're all a bit mad and they're all very, 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 very patriotic. And football is an expression of that patriotism. And I think in Europe we've lost that. And I think it's, you know, if you look at the history of Europe as opposed to the history of South America, it's very evident maybe that why that would be. And again, I do keep harkening back to the money side of it. You know, we see the Copa Libertadores is changing for 2017 season. They're expanding it. It's starting to creep in down here, although with the money will never, ever, ever be the same. I think you get more for winning a game in the Champions than you do for winning the whole of the Copa Libertadores. So therein lies its problem.
But Dave, talking about the Copa Libs there, that's actually a good idea what they're doing because it allows teams who are in the Copa and the Copa Sudamericana to put out their best team for that competition and at the same time put out their best team in the league. Because if you've noticed, especially with Argentinian teams, if they're in the Copa Libs, they want to win that more than the league. And you'll notice that, for argument's sake, Boca will win the league 1 year and then they're in the Copa Libs. And then when you're watching their league stands, they could be, you know, harbouring the mid-table. Because it means more to them to win the Copa Libs. So I think, no, that's actually a good idea what they're doing, where they stretch it over a much longer period of time, allowing the teams to then be competitive on both fronts.
No, I agree with you. And the one thing that they retained, they were talking about change, and I'm so happy that they actually retained, was the home and away final. Because given, you know, it's a fairly sort of poor society down here. It's not a great deal of money and not a great deal of wealth amongst the majority of people. And, you know, to pick a stadium, maybe say you've got a team from Ecuador and say a team from Venezuela in the final and the final's in Argentina, it's a once-only game, you're basically barring supporters the opportunity to actually see their team in a final. This home and away thing, I number one, I believe that after my experience in the Europa League here last season, where the final ended up being two very big teams and in a 30,000-seater stadium, just didn't work. Wouldn't it have been better to take it to Seville and bring it back to Anfield as a way of a final? That means more people get to experience it. It's also an extra game for these people who love their money and love their make more money off another game. I appreciate it's another game in the season, but it's the end of the season. This Copa Sudamericana that you talk about is the most bizarre tournament in world football because nobody knows how you qualify for it. I've heard about three guys take a crack at it on the South American pod. I've even heard Tim Vickery take a crack at it. Nobody's convinced me yet that they know how. It seems to be some kind of a lottery that your league goes, you know what, you can go into it. No, you know, to send those guys, what did you win? Ah, you go. And there's no structure to it. But then it's this totally South American thing. It wouldn't be a Copa Sudamericana without a bit of chaos.
Yeah, don't expect me to explain it to you either, because I haven't a fucking clue how to get in.
While we're on South America then, Dave, do you wanna tell us your Ecuador story?
Oh, yeah. Your guy Valencia plays for Ecuador. There was a little incident during the game this week, and the police were on the trail of Eder Valencia for unpaid maintenance to the sum of about 15 grand sterling.
No, it's $1,700.
Oh, is that all? I thought it was $17,000.
Yeah. No, it's $1,700.
Okay, so $1,700, which I'm sure he makes in a couple of hours. So apparently he owed this to the CSA in the UK, and the police were ready to arrest him, and they had to intervene and let him play the game first. So the game went ahead, and Valencia played, I think, until about the 80th minute, when he went down like a ton of shite and had to be ambulanced out off the pitch and out of the stadium and away from the police to avoid arrest. Whilst in hospital, I think his legal representatives managed to negotiate a deal for, and I can't get over that it's only $1,700. I thought it was $17,000.
Yeah, $1,700 it said on the news report I watched. And it was apparently something like the 87th minute.
Yeah.
And he went down in a heap acting.
Yeah.
To try and get away from the police, who actually chased the stretcher ambulance. You've got cops running after it, trying to catch him before he makes a quick jump into the ambulance. The ambulance speeds away.
Did he go down clutching his wallet?
Yeah, like Carry On Football. It was hysterical.
But that kind of thing still happens down here. That is, like, this is why we watch the Copa Libertadores, and Gavin will back me up on this. It is just sheer madness from the first to the last kick, and sometimes for 2 or 3 hours afterwards, and sometimes for 2 or 3 hours beforehand. It is just pandemonium and chaos, and it's compelling viewing. Okay, some of the games at times can be a little bit boring, but on the whole, it's probably the purest football left on the planet. I would go as far as, and Gavin, well, I hear your heart.
Well, you say that, but I've watched a few Copa Libertadores games where the ball has been completely incidental to what was going on the pitch.
That's what I mean. It's football in its purest form, Jan.
Yeah, basically belting, biting, kicking.
And, you know, these blind referees, you should have gone to Specsavers. Fucking Specsavers can't save these guys. Like,
absolutely.
Big Sam's got nothing on some of them referees then, is that what you're saying?
Well,
basically.
It's how they roll in South America. You know, it's a cultural thing, it's a DNA thing. You know, there's nothing wrong with being corrupt.
Referees in South America are born with brown envelopes in their hands.
Yeah, went to send the guy off, went to the wrong pocket, and ended up giving him $5,000.
It sounds about normal.
It's kind of a nice segue when, you know, you mention corruption. I immediately start thinking of FIFA. I can't understand why.
Fireboys, then.
Yeah. So for some reason, it just made me think about FIFA. The guy who's president now was Gianni Infantino,
who is currently also under investigation.
Well, let's face it, if you're at FIFA, you're going to be under investigation. That's just
exactly. Even if you're the cleaning lady.
Yeah, it's just the kind of ground.
She doesn't have the dabs to buy her way out, but yeah.
No, exactly.
Part for the course. Part for the course. So anyway, he's coming up with this grand plan to increase the World Cup to 48 countries from 2026. I think it's a bit mad myself. It dilutes point of competition. I mean, what would they end up? The World Cup goes from 4 or 5 weeks up to around about 7 or 8 weeks. I mean, guys, Gav, I'll let you go first. I mean, what about yourself? 48 teams for the World Cup? Do you think this sound right or what?
What is at the moment? 32, isn't it?
It is 32, yes.
32. Well, when you look at the Euros, that went from 16 up to 24. Did it have an impact? I think it did have. I think it had a massive impact. I know Jan was talking on about Iceland there, but Iceland aren't actually a bad side.
Well, they're not now.
Yeah, but even throughout the Euros and even the qualifying, like they did beat Holland, Turkey.
No, well, when I say not now, I mean that not now in recent years. But 5-6 years ago, they were using Liverpool reserves and things like this as their main strikers. So they've come on in leaps and bounds fairly quickly. Good coaching, getting their crack of the money. It can happen.
Now, we're looking at the 24 team format there of the Euros gone. Yeah, you didn't have many games where the heavyweights were up against each other in the group stages because of that format. And I think the same is possibly going to happen. When you think about it, 48 teams in the World Cup, okay, you'll get a few shocks, but you're still going to have the likes of New Zealand, Fiji, you know, China. These teams, they'll never be able to compete with the Europeans. So, yeah, well, 6 weeks of a World Cup. No, yeah. I hope it doesn't go through, but again, it's... Everything just seems to be increasing, whether it's money, games, everything's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
So, but just to put it into context, 48 teams, that's out of 211 members of FIFA.
It's nearly a fifth.
Yeah, so it's almost a quarter, isn't it? Almost a quarter of FIFA world members would be in the tournament.
And have they shown anything or any projection as to how what the impact has on federation for federation? How many more places, for example? Is this the ruse to get more European teams in there? Or
I don't think they've actually aired any details on it yet, Dave. My position on it would be, I'm not against it per se. It depends how it's done. If, as Gav says, it goes on for 6 or 7 weeks and eats into everybody's pre-season, obviously that's far from ideal and really a no-no. It depends how it's done. If they make each group slightly bigger, what is it at the moment? They're usually about 8 groups?
Yeah, yeah.
So you can make 8 groups of 6. That needn't be too impactful if it's done well. It means that they'd have to have less days between games, perhaps, in the early stages.
And more but games being played at the same time, Jan. This is the thing.
Yes, exactly.
Except they won't play the games at the same time because that's impacted upon your TV audience.
Well, that's what they've got to sort of deal with, isn't it? It'll have to be one of those red button moments. It might not, but we don't know yet. I mean, if we take the cynical view, which, let's face it, most of the time we do, it probably won't happen. But the point is, until we see the details of how it's going to be done, if it actually gets that far, if it actually happens, then I think we have to hold fire. Because so far, all we've heard is the proposition 48 teams. Now, we all know, just the four of us, if we sit around and put our heads together, we can come up with a way that will work. It's whether FIFA will do that or they'll be taking the brown envelopes again. So we'll have to see. I suspect it'll be taking the brown envelopes, but we can't condemn it outright until we see what the plan is, I don't think.
Just to clarify, they are going to be discussing this and debating this. This is an idea that they'll be taking forward. But the thing is, as well, though, is that Infantino, actually, it was on his manifesto of him, is elected the right word? He was elected as FIFA president?
He was actually elected, yeah.
I know they have elections, but I mean, basically, yeah.
Andy, they're the best elections money can buy.
But basically, anyway, his mandate on becoming FIFA president was expanding the World Cup to 40 teams. So he's seemingly hell-bent on expanding the World Cup and making it bigger. So the World Cup is going to be, let's face it, he's in charge. He will get his way one way or another. So we're either looking at it going to 40, or we could be looking at it going to 48. I mean, see, my feeling is this kind of dilutes the tournament. Yeah, I understand you're saying, yeah, the Euros went from 16 to 24, but I think in terms of structure, 24 kind of works better than the 16.
But Andy, there were 16 good nations.
Yeah, yeah. So, but in the Euros, I think you could just about get away with one thing,
just to make a point here.
Yeah, you know,
You're talking about making a difference. Now, Northern Ireland topped their group in the Euros and would have been there no matter what format it took. So it doesn't necessarily come to pass. You know, Northern Ireland, I accept, would be classed as minnows. So it doesn't necessarily follow order that this will be the way it will be.
Yeah, what I'm saying, though, is that the Euros, I think in the Euros, you can just about get away with 24. Yeah, you might get a couple of, you know, pretty poor nations turn up, but with the amount of that they are enough good size throughout Europe that you can still have a credible tournament. But realistically, you know, if it's going to be spread around to various different continents around the world, to get that many, you know, teams to up it by that many, are you looking at some really, really weak sides getting in there and diluting the whole tournament? That's my concern.
Well, they'll still have to get through their regional qualifiers to get there. Oh, this means that either of the Korean teams, who've got a respectable record at the World Cup, are likely to be there, but maybe instead of one, it'll be both. Japan, of course, they've been in and out of the World Cups recently. They'll probably be more regular, but they've acquitted themselves quite well. Australia, they've done reasonably well in recent World Cups when they've got through. They haven't often got... I think they got out of the group once, but they've put up a good fight when they've been in there. And I think it's too easy, almost patronising, to say about the dilution of the competition. I still go with the thing, everybody deserves a crack. And if they qualify, if they get through their regional qualifiers to get there, fine. The chances are, if they're really that crap, they're not going to get past the first round anyway. But, like I said earlier, they've had a chance, they'll have played some of the big boys, and they'll have learned something. And maybe the next time they'll come back and maybe they'll go through and they'll knock somebody out like Belgium or, you know, or Peru. These things happen. But if you don't give them a chance, you don't get the surprises. You don't get teams growing.
That's what you've got the qualifiers for, isn't it, then? To whittle it down so that you have the best.
The qualifiers pretty much go the same way. That in certain regions, if you've got like the Oceania group, you've probably got Australia, New Zealand, South Timor, God knows what.
Now, I don't think Australia are in the Oceanic. I think they've been moved to Asia.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're in now. It changes around a bit, doesn't it? But the thing is, some of them are never going to get through, whether it's 48 teams or 148 teams. But there will be a few which bubble up and they'll come through. They might appear in one or two World Cups and they might cause a couple of shocks and they might eventually get better so they start becoming regular. And you have to respect that. You have to give them that chance to prove what they can do. And you can't simply bitch and say, well, I'm not really interested in this. All I want to see is Italy against Spain or Argentina against Brazil. Because, I mean, you can see that whenever you like, to be honest.
Yeah, but let's be honest, Jan. I'd much rather watch Italy versus Spain than, we say, China versus India.
Well, I wouldn't. Sometimes I'd like to see China versus India and see how they're getting on. See what the standard's like. If they're not on the box, I'm never going to find out.
Yeah, but knowing FIFA, we'll end up with Tasmania as the home
host nation
for the World Cup.
If that happens, I think we can see where it's going, can't we?
But that's another aspect.
I'm still fuming at the idea of Qatar. I agree that side of it is as bent as buggery. There's no other way of putting it.
But the Qatar thing, if you want to look at it, Jan, you know, even the last one here in Brazil, you know, I got to see two of traditionally the world's superpowers of football here and who travel extremely well from Europe, and that's the Netherlands and Germany. And normally they have massive support traveling. Wasn't here.
Yeah.
They didn't come to Brazil. And for that, you know, you translate that into Qatar. How many will go there as well?
Well, the thing is, you shouldn't really base a sports tournament, be it football or anything else, in a place which is not conducive to that sports tournament. That's the first thing. It's crazy. I mean, I've always favoured partially the Eurovision Song Contest idea to a degree, which is that the team who wins it hosts it, and it's up to everybody else to then break their monopoly. That works for me. But there are other ways. I quite like the idea of each World Cup is in goes clockwise, if you like, to a different federation. And then comes back again. But there are some federations who really, you can't do it there. And the Middle East in summer, no, you can't really. So that has to be looked at in a different way.
It's a detriment to the spectacle.
It's a detriment to the spectacle. It's a detriment to the players themselves. It's bloody dangerous for some of the players themselves. It's just not conducive to the sport. Some logic has to come into it. And that's where logic really kicks in. It can't be simply about, oh, everybody's entitled at that point, because it's just not really realistically feasible. And all this talk about, oh, we'll move it to winter. Oh, great. that's going to bugger up everybody's domestic season apart from the Russians.
No, you see your Eurovision likeness. It'll be very much like, you know, Germany are at the moment the top team. You know, you couldn't look past Germany at the moment for an international tournament. They would be the favourites going to the most. And, you know, if they were to win two or three World Cups in the bounce, seeing just how little economically that the World Cup does for a country, as I've experienced here in Brazil, it wouldn't take Germany too long to go, hang on, that's just losing a semi-final.
But they have the infrastructure already in place.
Oh, they do, they've without a doubt. But
world-class stadiums, which for a country like Germany, it would actually be profitable to be holding a World Cup.
Well, this is something else that has to be looked at, isn't it? The correct infrastructure in a place, the correct climate, the correct infrastructure. It has to be doable without actually bankrupting somewhere.
Yeah, you need to be.
All this has got to be taken into account.
I think your country needs to be stable financially and economically.
Yeah.
To actually host a World Cup.
And politically, to be honest, as well.
Because you have to have more than one stadium.
Uh-huh. And also, you don't gain, as a country, you don't gain that much money from having a World Cup because FIFA fucking pocket the lot.
Well, exactly. You shouldn't have a World Cup in a country where it has to build half a dozen stadiums to accommodate the World Cup. If it has, you know, a dozen great stadiums to choose from, more or less, that's the sort of place you want to do it. And that does mean some South American countries, and it means Europe. And surprisingly, it also means the Far East could do it quite well as well. But, you know, if they have to build one or two stadiums, that's fair enough. But having to build a stadium in the middle of the fucking jungle, which is only ever used as a car park or something thereafter, that's just madness. And Dave's right. Basically, because of the rules they employ and tax dodges they employ for host countries, FIFA are the only ones who ever really make any money out of it.
Yeah, well, what about like fixing some kind of a schedule then of saying, right, you know, this the World Cup will be Europe, then South America, then Europe, then Asia, then Europe, then North America.
Well, that was the way fortunes change, Andy.
That was the way it was supposed to be, and that was the way it once was. But now it's not. Now it's
the highest bidder.
Effectively, yeah. It now it's bent, isn't it? Let's be honest. The way it's done now.
Like honestly,
Whether Infantino or whoever can change that, we'll see who the next one's given to, won't we?
I'm no England fan, but I'd have much rather have seen England get their bid for the Qatar World Cup as opposed to Qatar. I think it made much more sense. Common sense
Dave, so would most of the world's fans and most of the world's players, because it's a logical choice. Logic should come into it at some point.
How many flights to Qatar are there a week from around the world on? And you know, what will it be like travelling around there? You know, I think it's a very, very strict laws and so on, and certain with alcohol and so on, that there's doesn't seem to be a great deal of leniency. It's a culture which obviously we need to respect. It's the culture of the country. And you've got
there also seems to be a question of whether female fans will be allowed to attend the games. That one's not been clearly answered yet. It's been fudged so far.
Yeah, that's the Qatar one is the biggest fuck up FIFA ever did. I mean,
it is. It's by far the most monstrous, corrupt fuck up they've ever got themselves involved in.
Like, can you imagine the Irish fans at the Euros were outstanding. They were brilliant. They were memorable. Now, if those lads get up to what they did in France over in Qatar, so that's beheading. drink in public.
Yeah, well, we had them here in Bordeaux. To be honest, we went and met quite a few of them. Irish Nev, who's on Twitter, he's a lovely lad. We went and met him and his mates and whatever, and we had a great time with them. They were great fun. They were lively. They were noisy. As drunk as skunks, but they weren't violent. They didn't make within a mess. The they were respectful. They were completely within the law, and they made it fun. And to be fair to them, while we're at it, the Welsh fans did too. So did the Bulgarians or whoever it was we had here as well. And the Swedes, they were all, and the Austrians, the Slovaks too. They were all behaved really well. But as Gav said, that wouldn't be allowed in Qatar.
Could you imagine if, just say, Scotland qualify for that World Cup? Christ. Can you imagine the Tartan Army staying sober for a month?
I think Strachan has that in mind with the way they're playing at the moment. But no, that Qatar one is—it's even today. Think, what the fuck? Like, what? How in God's name is that going to work? Because the World Cup is made by the fans. It really is. It's an amazing spectacle. I just cannot see how it's going to work unless they severely change some laws. And we're not talking about, you know, amendments. We're actually talking about like 2,000-year-old law.
Well, they'd effectively, to some degree, have to suspend their own constitution to accommodate, shall we say, the habits and practices of other countries. I can't see them doing that, so I don't know. You know,
why should they, Jan, either? You know, at the end of the day, that is their culture. It needs to be respected. Mm-hmm. But again, it just leads you to the same closing sentence. None of this makes sense. It's a complete fuck-up.
Yep.
So at any point, is it actually feasible that someone in FIFA says, you know what, this just can't happen. We've got to do something. We've got to change it.
Well, it's still, what, six? When's Qatar? Is that
2026.
6 years.
6 years. Yeah, it's 6 years away. So there is still time to do it. But, of course, it's all about the money. Qatar have spent X amount of money paying slave workers to build these stadiums, you know, where they've been dying by the hundred. It's a complete and utter mess. Whether anybody's got the will to extricate themselves from this is the question. And I don't think that will is there.
Well, I don't see many people actually travelling to this World Cup.
Well, this could be the World Cup that defines all future World Cups, couldn't it?
I mean, a World Cup in winter time. Well, for the European perspective.
Yeah.
It just what?
Well, here, I'll tell you a good one. And I know that a lot of people, it must be a common glitch in the thing. My football manager won't even accept that the World Cup is going to take place in Qatar. It automatically changes in 2021. The changed location. On my save, it went to England. So make of that what you will. Maybe this game's trying to tell us something. And I know other people who have played it get exactly the same thing, but go to different countries. But on Football Manager 16, the World Cup never takes place in Qatar. Make of that what you will.
Well, the only thing that FIFA, if somebody does decide to bite the bullet on this, I've got going for them, is that there are countries such as England or Germany or France or Spain or Italy who have the infrastructure and all the facilities already in place that they could quickly transfer it to. But like I said, I think the real problem is going to be the actual will of somebody at FIFA to take on the Qataris legally and financially and say, no, we've changed our minds. This is not feasible.
But what about if they do uncover some evidence of shady goings on, shall we say,
the logic for the reasons for doing it are already manifest and manifold, you know, but it's the will to actually follow through, and I don't think that's there.
Jan, I've actually read that if FIFA did pull out, Qatar would own them
effectively. Yeah,
yeah. So, you know, it is going to go ahead. Nobody in FIFA has the power or the money to say, look, sorry, but no. Even if there was wrongdoings, they just couldn't afford to
pull out.
That's
the problem.
Because Qatar, okay, FIFA is a billion-dollar industry.
Well, at the very least, Gav, they'd spend the next 2 decades in court.
Yeah, but again, you're talking about an endless supply of money from Qatar. They destroy them. That probably wouldn't be a bad thing, destroying FIFA. And then, do you know what, abandon FIFA and set up a new body, a new organisation.
Yeah. Well, that you never know. That might be the sort of thing that eventually comes out of this. FIFA is in very dangerous territory over this, and for that matter, the Russian one as well. It could, you know, you've got Infantino and the others now saying, no, we're cleaning house now, whatever. It might all be too little too late, because this thing is looming up on the horizon. And the closer it gets, the worse it looks. Yeah, it could well be, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back.
So if you started a new federation, what would we call it then? Would it be Fuffy instead of FIFA?
Fuffy.
It's
the trouble with that is that if you were to set up a new organization, a lot of the smaller nations actually rely on the current FIFA. So they'd be they'd be afraid to, you know, join the new breakaway one.
I think it would still happen. I reckon we should call it the Association of Registered Soccer Executives. Penny's going to drop in a minute somewhere.
Say that again.
The Association of Registered Soccer Executives.
Yes. Well done.
Fucking hell, guys. Yeah, I know it's Sunday.
We're both hungover. Fuck off.
When are you not hungover?
Well, it's Sunday. You always talk to me on a Sunday as a current occurrence.
Basically, should I put a fiver on? If Qatar own FIFA, should I put a fiver on Qatar winning the 2022 World Cup?
Easily.
Yeah. 12 penalties in the last 8 minutes.
Yeah, it's been the biggest fuck up in football in FIFA's history. Okay,
I can't think of anything that comes close.
Brazil was pretty close.
No, not to this. Brazil is an obvious place to have a World Cup. Okay, politically it was messy. Financially it was a disaster. But Brazil and football, no, same sentence.
They're married. Partners. Yeah, there's no two ways.
Yeah,
about it.
Exactly. But Qatar, come on. You think of Qatar, you don't think, oh, football.
Yeah, you would go, hey, I want to go to that one. You'd be like,
well, exactly.
No. Yeah, but it's that thing, just with Qatar, and it's the only image I can really see is that if I was over there walking down the street with like a bag of cans with a can in my head. That's what we do when we go away to these tournaments. We have a laugh, we enjoy it. Now, okay, not everybody drinks alcohol, but for those that do, it goes hand in hand.
I think you'd say that most football fans on an international tournament will get drunk at some point.
Absolutely. But to have a total ban to say, well, look, no.
Yeah, that whole thing then. What if between now and then you have an international player who's openly gay?
That's a great point, Andy, because that is going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with Gav. I can see that happening. Somebody saying, I'm not going because, and somebody needs to take a stand, and so on and so forth. The whole thing could unravel. You know, in the end, the decision of not to do Qatar might end up being taken out of FIFA's hands.
Yeah, that's right. The players themselves could turn around and say, because if one player...
The players, the fans, the TV companies, the sponsors, somebody somewhere, or a mix thereof, could well take it out of FIFA's hands.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, what about then, say, between now and then, you get a top international footballer who comes out and says, says I am openly gay, but... I want to play at the World Cup. So it's not the player saying, I don't want to be there, and they're not going to be there because of the laws, but they're saying they want to be there, and they intend on being there, almost challenging them. So where does it go from there?
Interestingly, on that one, they'd have a similar problem with the Russian one.
Yeah, but Russia is bad. It's nowhere near as bad as Qatar.
No, but the gay part would be a real issue.
Yeah, but I think
especially when
with Russia only literally being around the corner, I don't think it's long enough for
the Russian one will go ahead. I think it's the Qatar one that's the biggie.
Like, honestly, if your country qualifies for Russia, it's one of those ones where you would go, I'd still go. But Qatar? No.
Not
definitely
a chance.
Not.
Absolutely. And on that bombshell, before we close up then, any plugs for anyone? Jan, I'll let you go first.
Nothing at the moment, but hopefully a new Jumpers for Goalposts, that is, JFG as I like to call it, should be out at the end of this coming month.
Expect it in March then?
Not this time. The music is already in the can.
Very much looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Gav, what about yourself? What's going on for you?
We have... brand new sound of La Liga coming out on Tuesday, which would be focusing on the Spanish national team. And it's going really well. So if you haven't heard it, download it. Again, it's on the World Football Index. And if you want to follow me, it's at La Liga Gav. But again, no Liverpool fans, please.
Would that be the distinctly autumn La Liga, sound of La Liga?
That's probably why I don't follow him. No Liverpool fans.
No, it's it'd be a new one. That's the one that was just released Tuesday gone. We have a new one coming out on Tuesday.
The distinctly autumn one then, yeah?
No, Jesus Christ, man. That was out last week!
We're highlighting that wonderful line.
I was just poking. Distinctly autumn, distinctly autumn, distinctly autumn.
It's the best line we've ever had on World Football Index, I think.
Yeah, that's who, Joe and his beautiful way of looking at life. He's like a poet. El Joe is like a poet. And he's actually wasted the umpire. That man should be on the telly.
Yeah. I've got to say, the way you said absolutely is the favourite reaction I've ever had.
Gavin said absolutely when he really meant, what the fuck?
Absolutely. Oh man, that was great. Dave, come on then, on to you. What have you got going on?
International break, very little to be honest with you. World Football Index, have the usual. We've got this, we'll have, as Gavin said, La Liga. We'll have South America again this week. There's one just released day before yesterday, and it's very, very good. If you haven't caught that one, listen to it. It's about the CONMEBOL qualifiers. And as I say, they go in depth on the story from Ecuador and Valencia. Which is actually quite funny. I did it very badly by comparison. So Stevie Grieve has had another tactics pod out as well, which is very, very good. We take a bit of a look at Pep Guardiola, take a look at Klopp's tactics. Just a little sort of filler for the international break. But as I say, all the usual shows will be out. There'll be another Italia Serie A pod coming as well this week. Other than that, just stay tuned because we've got everything covered. It should maybe even Champions League out again towards the end of the week. So all's good.
Superb. Just from me before we head off into the sunset. As always, a shout out for the All In Sports Network who do carry this podcast. Steve Gennaro and Dave Hendrick, two fine chaps. So big thanks to them. So that's it. That's Bodies in the Box 23. In the box, in the can, whatever you want. International football. We'll see you next week.